A poet's task is to find beauty, even in the most hideous parts of our existence. So it's not surprising that poetry is starting to emerge from the chaos of the Iraq War. Brian Turner served as an infantry team leader with the 3rd Striker Brigade Combat Unit. This is from his poem about a suicide bombing in Mosul.
And the man who triggered the button, who may have invoked the prophet's name or not, he is obliterated at the epicenter. He is everywhere. He is of all things. His touch is the air taken in, the blast and the wave, the electricity of shock. His is the sound the heart makes quick in the panic's rush, the surge of blood searching for light and color. That sound the martyr cries, filled with the word his soul is made of, Inshallah.
That's Brian Turner reading an excerpt from his poem, 2,000 Pounds. The poem is from his book called Ear Bullet. Anne Strainchamp spoke with Turner after he got back from his tour of duty and asked him to read the title poem.
Ear Bullet. If a body is what you want, then here is bone and gristle and flesh. Here is the clavicle snapped wish, the aorta's open valves, the leap thought makes at the synaptic gap. Here is the adrenaline rush you crave, that inexorable flight, that insane puncture into heat and blood. And I dare you to finish what you've started. Because here, bullet, here is where I complete the word you bring hissing through the air. Here is where I moan the barrel's cold esophagus, triggering my tongue's explosives for the rifling I have inside of me. Each twist of the round spun deeper. Because here, bullet, here is where the world ends every time.
That is such a beautiful and harrowing poem, both at the same time. Where were you when you wrote it?
I was in Mosul. I think it was February of 2004. And I wrote it, and I put it in a Ziploc bag, and I put it in my breast pocket and carried it there the remainder of the tour that we were there for about another 7 or 8 months or so.
Wow.
So,
would you read us another poem? I mean, maybe there's one that you like especially.
I always like to read Eulogy. It's important to me. And there's a story I always say with this because I think it's important. And that is when my unit came back from Iraq, our brigade was arrayed out on a parade field. And it was a sunny day. And there were friends and family in the bleachers, reporters, banners. And the colonel came up to give a speech. And he gave a very good speech. And at one point, he asked for a moment of silence while he read the names of those who didn't come back with us. As he read the list, I realized that he didn't say the name of a soldier in my platoon, Private Bruce Miller, Private First Class Bruce Miller, and he was in a second squad Bravo team. He was a machine gunner. And I feel to this day that his name wasn't in that list because he didn't die what was considered a soldier's death. In some small way, I hope this poem rectifies that. Eulogy. It happens on a Monday at 11:20 a.m. as tower guards eat sandwiches and seagulls drift by on the Tigris River. Prisoners tilt their heads to the west, though burlap sacks and duct tape blind them. The sound reverberates down concertina coils the way piano wire thrums when given slack. And it happens like this, on a blue day of sun, when Private Miller pulls the trigger to take brass and fire into his mouth. The sound lifts the birds up off the water. A mongoose pauses under the orange trees. And nothing can stop it now, no matter what blur of motion surrounds him, no matter what voices crackle over the radio in static confusion, because if only for this moment the earth is stilled, and Private Miller has found what low hush there is down in the eucalyptus shade there by the river.
That's beautiful. You said you wrote this poem partly out of anger. And grief, of course, but anger because Private Miller's name wasn't read with the list of the others who'd fallen in battle. How did that make you feel?
It did make me feel angry. It seems so disrespectful for an American of the United States, I mean, a citizen of our country, to go over and put their lives on the line and at some point not be able to take it for whatever reasons and crack and basically kill himself. I realize I know how some people feel about that, but at the same time, I felt like that person had been pushed to that point by war and deserved to be listed among those who we lost.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the persona that comes through in your poems is really interesting because there is that toughness and the anger and the practicality of a soldier who's there to do a job. And then there's also at times such tenderness. It's almost painful realizing that those two could be present together for you. I wanted to ask you about a couple of different poems. There's one called What Every Soldier Should Know. Maybe you'd read that one for us.
Sure. This poem starts with a quote from Rousseau, which says, "To yield to force is an act of necessity, not of will. It is at best an act of prudence. What every soldier should know." If you hear gunfire on a Thursday afternoon, it could be for a wedding or could be for you. Always enter home with your right foot. The left is for cemeteries and unclean places. Ogaf tara armik is rarely useful. It means stop or I'll shoot. Sabah al-khair is effective. It means good morning. Inshallah means Allah be willing. Listen well when it is spoken. You will hear the RPG coming for you. Not so the roadside bomb. There are bombs under the overpasses, in trash piles, in bricks, in cars. There are shopping carts with clothes soaked in foo gas, a sticky gel of homemade napalm. Parachute bombs and artillery shells sewn into the carcasses of dead farm animals. Graffiti sprayed under the overpasses, "I will kill you, American." Men wearing vests rigged with explosives walk up, raise their arms, and say, "Inshallah." There are men who earn $80 to attack you, $5,000 to kill. Small children who will play with you, old men with their talk, women who offer chai, and any one of them may dance over your body tomorrow.
So that really conveys such a strong sense of separation from the people of Iraq, the people who may be at any moment trying to kill you. And on the facing page, there's another poem, the Al-Harishma Weapons Market, with this vignette of a guy who's running a small weapons market, putting his four-year-old to bed. And it's written with such tenderness. So I wanted to ask you how those things can be there together.
You know, as you're driving through the streets and you see different people's faces, you can see, just as you can here in America, if you walk down the city sidewalk in Chicago or New York or, you know, some small town here in Fresno, Madera or something, where I come from, you see people's faces and you see happy people and sad people. And I knew that everyday people on the street in Iraq are struggling just to live their lives, to love the people that they care about, and to find a way to regain the life that they might have once had.
Mm-hmm. This seems like sort of an odd question, but you're back now and you've had one of the most intense experiences of your life, and you've written some beautiful and desolate poetry. Is there any way in which you miss the war?
I miss Bosch and Fiorillo and Joukowsky and Zavala and even Hathaway. You know, there's the people that I worked with, I miss them, and Knight and Lou, you know, the squad that I was in. And I do miss some of the beauty and the things I saw while I was over there and learning about a place. But every day I was there, I was hoping I could go home.
Yeah, there are a number of poems in which you kind of convey that, but I'm thinking especially about the one near the end as you're leaving, Night in Blue.
Oh, yes.
Would you read that one for us?
Sure. Night in Blue. At 7,000 feet and looking back, running lights blacked out under the wings and America waiting. A year of my life disappears at midnight. The sky, a deep viridian. The house lights below, small as match heads burned down to embers. Has this year made me a better lover? Will I understand something of hardship, of loss? Will a lover sense this in my kiss or touch? What do I know of redemption or sacrifice? What will I have to say of the dead? That it was worth it? That any of it made sense? I have no words to speak of war. I never dug the graves in Tal Afar. I never held the mother crying in Ramadi. I never lifted my friend's body when they carried him home. I have only the shadows under the leaves to take with me, the quiet of the desert, the low fog of Balad, orange groves with ice forming on the rinds of fruit. I have a woman crying in my ear late at night when the stars go dim. Moonlight and sand is a resonance of the dust of bones and nothing more.
Brian Turner served as an infantry team leader with the 3rd Striker Brigade combat unit in Iraq. His book of poetry is called Hear Bullet, and Strange Hemp spoke with him.